Hey, Emily.
Hey, Kyle.
Emily.
What?
Guess what?
What?
Emily, guess what?
What?
We're on Patreon.
Oh, my God. What is Patreon?
Patreon is a place where you can go to support the Accessible Stole and give some money to support us in doing our podcasting adventure.
So we're getting money?
Well, no, not us. We're actually just rolling it back into the podcast in order to pay for things like better hosting, better services, more transcripts.
Did you say transcripts?
I did. I did say
transcripts? Does that mean that the Accessible Stall is going to be accessible?
Weird, right? Just go to patreon.com/theaccessiblestall and give your donation today if you're willing and able. If not, don't. We don't care. We still love you. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Emily Liddell.
And I'm Kyle Khachaturian.
And you're listening to another episode of The Accessible Stall.
What are we going to talk about today, Emily?
We're going to talk about disability and mental health.
What?
Which arguably could be the same thing.
What?
So, some people consider mental health to fall under the umbrella of disability, and some people don't. And that's okay. You can consider it in any way that suits your identity, but we're going to talk about the intersection of mental health disabilities with all other disabilities today.
And I'm going to say something other than what for a second. Yes, how you identify and if you separate them or put them together in the umbrella term of disability is a topic for a different day. Today, Emily and I are going to talk about, like she said, where the intersection lies. And we're also going to make one thing clear, that although depression and disability do often coexist, that having a physical disability does not ever imply that you are depressed. And if you are depressed with a physical disability, whether or not it's caused by your disability is irrelevant. They are two separate entities that it can affect you for any reason, at any time, for reasons that are related to your physical disability or not at all related to your physical disability.
What he said.
Good. Now, having said that, there are some disabilities, like mine, that have a much stronger relationship with depression than, you know, another disability or an able-bodied person.
Let's remind our good friends at home what your disability is.
Yeah, so I have cerebral palsy, and if you have cerebral palsy, your odds of being depressed are 3 to 4 times more likely than your average able-bodied person. No one knows if it's something to do with the brain damage that causes CP versus things about CP that suck that sort of manifest later in life as depression, like not being able to do certain things. No matter what the actual underlying reason, though, is, it's irrelevant because the fact of the matter is, if you have CP, you are much more likely to have depression. And I can say that I've, you know, dealt with it in my life as well. And today we're going to talk about it.
And I, being more of a rarity and having Larson syndrome and something that hasn't been particularly researched, have no evidence as to whether my disability is at all connected to any mental health disabilities, but I most definitely experience anxiety and depression. And oftentimes, it is connected to something about my disability, whether it is my body or whether it is the environment surrounding my body. But sometimes it's completely unrelated. And today I want to focus on the times when disability really has been at my physical disability has really been at the forefront of my mental health issues.
Cool.
Yeah, groovy, right?
Very. The grooviest.
So, since you said that there's, like, actual legit studies showing a correlation, yeah. I'm interested to hear about when your disability has directly been connected to episodes of depression.
Oh, God. A lot of these are going to sound trivial to our listeners, and for that, I apologize. But know that even though they might sound trivial, they really did have an actual impact on me.
I actually don't think you need to apologize, but you know, I get the caveat.
It's all relative. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Right. But the other thing, too, is I think a lot of times when it comes to having a disability, physical or a learning disability or a hidden disability that is not a mental health disability, whatever disability it is, it's not a mental health disability. I think we often find ourselves apologizing for these small things that have a massive impact on our life and saying, like, we know it doesn't sound like much to you.
Yeah, but it won't. And right, that's right. The thing. And I want you to, and I know that, but that doesn't diminish the huge impact that it had. And it really is, like, so insignificant to somebody who doesn't have CP, but I'm going to say it anyway. So my most recent bout with it, true, not like, oh, I had a bad day and the sky was gray and it was raining and I had a long day at work and it just put me in a really, really, really bad mood that day, kind of thing. But my latest, like, genuine fight with depression, which is something that I've struggled with since I was a teenager, but in recent memory, a couple years ago, I had a friend over and we were doing things that friends do, repairing a laptop, because that's a thing that normal friends do. And
I really did not know where you were going with the thing that friends do.
What? I mean, you don't repair laptops with your friends?
Can't say I do.
Well, get with it. It's the newest thing. Or at least it was in 2013. But anyway, so we're repairing this thing and I was in charge of connecting the screen to the rest of the laptop. And usually that's held in place by a tiny little ribbon cable that's very, very fragile and very hard to manipulate and very hard to get back in once you take it out. And I just couldn't do it. Like, I spent like 45 minutes not being able to do it. And I didn't think it had anything to do with my CP at all, like, because those things are hard to do no matter who you are. But my friend, who doesn't have CP and is able-bodied, I asked him for help, like, when I was done pulling my hair out, and he did it, like, in 5 seconds. And I was thrilled at the time. I was like, oh, this is great. Like, we did it. We've, like, finally. But when he left that night, I was like, that sucked. Like, that really sucked. Because there are very few times when I have to confront my disability head on. I know it's different for Emily because she uses a wheelchair and people like to stare at her all day and she can, you know, write essays about why that's dumb and wrong and she has stories for years, but I don't. And so on the days when I really do have to come face to face with my disability, it doesn't necessarily depress me anymore, but it used to. And it didn't come from any place of shame. It didn't come from any place of, like, I thought I was less than. It didn't even come from a place of this was something I didn't want, because, I mean, you know, I was born this way, so even if that were true, can't really do anything about it. It was more just, how can I expect people to treat me like everyone else, except for when it was absolutely necessary, if I can't even do something that, granted, the average person wouldn't just do on a Tuesday, like, repair a laptop, you know what I mean? But that extends to other things that involve similar fine motor skills. And I'm pretty lucky. Like, I'm on the CP spectrum, you can't get much less CP than me. And I don't mean that, like, as a one-up thing against anyone who has more CP. I say more in air quotes because there's really, there are quantifiable ways to do it, but there's no real, well, there are good ways, but you know what I mean. And so I got pretty lucky in that regard. So when I have to come face-to-face with it, it's like, oh, you know, now it's okay, because now it's like, whatever, you know, but there was a time when that was a genuine struggle for me, and it was all because of that damn laptop.
See, I've not gotten past that feeling of gut-wrenching awfulness when I confront something about my disability. Perfect example being a couple weeks ago, I went on a date with someone, and I did my research ahead of time to make sure that where we were going would be wheelchair accessible, because we were going to do one of those paint night events, you know, where you, like, paint a picture together with an instructor. And despite my, what I thought was careful planning, we got there, and as I'm getting out of my taxi, I get a text from him telling me that he's already in the building and there are stairs leading up to where the paint night is going to be. And there was no other way to get up there. And then my date and I proceeded to have dinner, but we were sitting directly underneath where the paint night was going on because it was an open area, even though it was up the stairs. And so the whole time we're eating dinner, we can hear the music blasting upstairs. We can hear the instructor telling people what to do. you know, the type of brushstroke to use, and we can hear the people up there having fun and laughing and ordering cocktails. And my date, credit to him, he said at one point, he was like, I'm not even listening to them anymore. But I could not get past that. And it just, that was kind of like the tip of the iceberg of depression issues, but the straw that broke the camel's back.
No, but it sort of, I mean, any progress you made to that point was sort of like, I mean, not that it invalidated your progress, but it's sort of like, hey, I'm still here. You remember me?
Yeah.
Your old friend.
Yeah, like I had been kind of on an upswing, and then all of a sudden I was left again to grapple with this horrible feeling of not quite being like everybody else. And I know that a building having stairs is not my fault, but it just really, it kind of knocked me back down a few pegs. And, you know, to some people, I imagine that sounds like I was just sad for a little while, but when you already experience depression and then you have something like that happen on top of it, it really does take over in your brain. And everything that you deal with in terms of self-worth and self-confidence and positive self-image all gets knocked down because of stairs in a building that you had no control over.
Hey, man, give yourself some credit. You researched and it was accessible to you. You did your homework. I mean, that didn't help. You know, you sort of looked into it and it turned out that it was still inaccessible, which, you know, obviously, if you found that out beforehand, you surely would have done something else or found a way to do it. It was the surprise, I imagine, that sort of really punched you in the gut.
Yeah, it sort of knocks the wind out of you a little bit. And also the fact that it was a person who I was going on a date with, who I was clearly trying to make a good impression on. And to me, it was just such a mortifying situation. And I know that, you know, it's all internalized ableism, blah, blah, blah. But call it what you want. It just sucks. Yeah. I have no label for it. It was just sucky.
Well, I think it's very important to sort of admit when having a disability isn't all peaches and roses. Which, oddly enough, you guys don't know this, but we've done this episode before and lost it like every single time. So it actually is kind of interesting that it's coming up. But, you know, there is something to be said that it's healthy to admit when having a disability certainly doesn't help things like depression. But it's also just as important not to, you know, as best you can, let it totally control your life. Because then, I don't want to say trapped, I feel like that's going to bother somebody, but you're pretty close to it, you know? And when you have a disability, part of, you know, I guess living with it is learning self-acceptance. And when you're hit with something like a stray ribbon cable or a unexpected set of stairs, it doesn't undo the work, or at least it didn't for me. I don't know about you. I don't want to speak for you about this, but it doesn't undo the work, but it certainly does remind you of that. And it makes you like look back, which is for me almost as bad as having gone through it. Like part of growing up is like never having to look back on the stuff you know is terrible. But when you're confronted with something like that, it's like, oh, now I have to.
Well, I know it's controversial, but I would venture to say that that is triggering. That, to me, is an actual trigger.
What, a stray set of stairs?
No. Well, yes, but I'm talking about it in a broader sense. So, you know how someone types trigger warning
before they post something?
But I'm just explaining in case someone is unfamiliar with the concept. So, often if someone posts something of a sensitive nature on social media, they will precede it with a trigger warning or a content warning just to let people know what's coming.
Like we did on our sexual assault episode.
Yeah, which I think was super necessary because I imagine that could really seriously trigger someone. But for me, reading an article about something inaccessible is not going to trigger me. But being in that moment sets me off. But no one can put the words trigger warning on top of an actual staircase.
Well, but it's not the staircase, though. That's the thing.
No, the staircase is the symbol.
Right. Right, exactly. It would make no sense to put it on the staircase. You can't really put a note on, you know.
But I guess it's more, I don't know if it's a metaphorical thing.
No. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying, like, there's no good way to do it. I mean, it sounds like what you're describing is the trigger is the sort of feeling of the instantaneous feeling of helplessness when you realize that there's nothing you can do. But what triggers helplessness for you might not be at all. So, you know what I mean? It's not like you have a term or like this thing's coming. Watch out if it bothers you, you know?
Yeah. And it's not even that one instance.
No, exactly. It can be anything.
Yeah. Like, but also it's not going to cause my depression or make it worse. But when those continually pile up, because it's not like stairs and inaccessibility are ever going to go away, then it becomes sort of like a fountain from which depression tends to flow, if that makes sense. I didn't mean to make
it. No, sure. No, I think it does. It's sort of like a crack in the dam.
Yeah, it's like you were doing such a good job building up your armor. I mean, we're going to use every mixed metaphor under the sun here, but, you know, under the sun. And we're also going to use
astrological metaphors.
Sure.
I think
that wasn't a metaphor. I couldn't think of my English terms at the moment. Anyway,
I think that when it comes to disability and mental health, that there we talked about, we specified the divide in the beginning, you know, for the sake of this show, we're not separating the two things, but there is a real divide in our world between people that have mental disabilities and mental illnesses and other disabilities that are generally considered hidden and ones that aren't, whether or not they're physical. They don't have to be. It's really hidden versus non-hidden, but it most commonly manifests itself physical versus other.
And I do think there's something to be said in that we have separate needs.
Oh yeah, completely. I'm not saying it's a bad thing that the separation exists. What I'm saying is it quickly tends to turn like tribal, almost. Not tribal, but like, you know, you don't understand. And it's like, yeah, you don't, but I'm still one of you.
It becomes, yeah, it's definitely a matter of identity. Like, there was this whole thing with the Women's March and how there was a lack of disability representation.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I'll take any opportunity to say how proud I am and how amazing it was that there were more women in one city for the Women's March than attended Donald Trump's entire inauguration. Yeah, little
come at us, Donald. We're trying every episode. Anyway, what was I saying? I got so into the Donald thing.
Oh, sorry. You were saying that allegedly at the Women's March, there was some sort of lack of inclusion for disability.
Not at the actual march. Platform.
Yeah, the platform. Right. And oh, which, by the way, you totally are amazing at and made some actual change. I am patting your back for you. You did amazing work.
Thanks, bro. I felt that through the computer. So, because of the lack of mention of disability, I wrote something regarding it, and one of the tweets that I got in response, not any sort of angry tweet, just a very thought-provoking one, that reminded me that some people identify under psych labels that wouldn't necessarily call themselves disabled. And
sure, you find that in other communities within our communities, too.
Yeah.
Like sometimes blind and low vision or deaf and low hearing or something like that.
Sure. And it was just an interesting reminder because I also sort of internally see my disabilities as two separate things, even though I'm aware that depression and anxiety are disabilities. Having a physical disability makes me see mental health and physical disability as two completely separate entities. In most cases, sort of kind of butting heads with each other inside my body for which I should give the most attention to at any given time. And then occasionally they'll both just gang up on me at once. Like, I know you mentioned earlier that every time we somehow manage to talk about the fact that disability is not always sunshine and roses, we always mess up those episodes or lose them.
By the way, was actually very depressing because they were very good.
Yeah, we had... So it reminded me when you said that because it was good. Like, one of the times that we tried to record that episode, I was having a really, really high pain day. And I was just slumped in my chair. Like,
she really did look pathetic. It was hilarious.
Yeah.
No, I'm okay, not joking, well, but this is just between she and I right now.
Yeah, because Kyle has seen me at my best and my worst. So I was such a pathetic lump laying in the chair, couldn't move. Every muscle in my body was just rebelling against me. And in that moment, I felt like that was just compounding my depression. It wasn't even a cause of it. It was just like, I'm depressed and I'm in pain. How much worse can this get?
I remember that instance in particular of that episode, because there was like four of them and we lost them all. You didn't want to do the episode that day. And I convinced you, like, no, this is actually the perfect day to do it because you will be so raw. And it's weird now that we're talking about it in the episode that has everything to do with that episode, too. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting because today is actually a relatively low pain day for me.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
So I'm like, yeah, but then...
Depression, all right.
But then it's also, like, kind of a frustrating emotional pain day, which then goes back to my disability in a different way because I went on a date today, of course, because it all comes back to that for me. And I thought it was going really, really well. And then all of a sudden, like 2.5 hours later, the atmosphere around us kind of changed and it just all went to garbage. And I have this inkling that it might have been disability related, but I honestly don't know because things just got super weird super quickly. So.
But I think that's an interesting point because.
What?
Whether or not it has something to do with your disability, it doesn't matter. But because you had the thought that it might, that's going to be in the back of your head, regardless of what the actual reason is, if you ever find it out. You know what I mean?
I'm never going to find it out.
But, no, but that doesn't. Yeah. What I'm saying is, it doesn't matter because even if he told you it had nothing to do with disability, right? The fact that you had the thought it could have something to do with it feeds into your anxiety and depression as well, separate from that. So it's just this vicious cycle that feeds all into itself.
And it's occurring to me now that a lot of what feeds the cycle is the fact that I know my disability is not changeable. So in some ways, I can manage my mental health, but I cannot in the same way manage my physical disability.
It's a very good point.
So, yeah, this is sort of like a revelation that
you're right, though. I mean, there's something very satisfying, I guess, about taking control of an aspect of your life that you quote-unquote shouldn't have control over in the form of whatever, therapy, medication, etc., whatever. Whereas your physical disability, it's just sort of there.
Yeah, like no amount of medication or therapy is going to make the wheelchair disappear. And I sincerely mean it when I say that I would not change myself, but it's also just sort of a crushing reality when you're trying to confront an aspect of your life and you realize that you can work through it mentally,
yeah,
but you're still in the same physical state.
Well, you know, it's very easy to say you wouldn't change yourself when you know you can't. And I'm not saying that to for any other reason other than it's true. You know, I'm also in that camp. I wouldn't change a hair on my head, but that's only because I know I can't. If I was presented with the opportunity using literal magic, I would actually think long and hard about it. And I think anybody would.
Well, for me, I would probably just change the things that cause me pain.
Yeah, I think like I would. I would think. I mean, I don't know. That's That's another episode, but sure, yeah, but yeah, if I were to change one thing about my CP, I suppose if we're talking about this, it would be to not feel pain anymore. That would be pretty baller.
Yeah, because I think a large part of depression is knowing that there are aspects of your life that you just cannot alter or fix.
Well, I think part of, I don't want to say cured my depression, because that's such a misnomer that people believe that can happen. You know, you can sort of keep it an infinite check, but it doesn't ever go away.
But you don't just wake up one morning and be like, yeah, depression is totally gone from my body.
But you do wake up one morning and totally just have it, which is awful. Now, I know not really, but I want to speak about self-acceptance, because that's something that, I don't know about you, probably quicker for you, I imagine, because you're sort of stuck in your wheelchair, so to speak, quote, stuck in your wheelchair, like it's not going anywhere. But for me, it took a while. Like, I never really, to admit to myself that this was the best it was going to. You ever seen As Good As It Gets with Jack Nicholson? Well, there's a scene in it where he, like, confronts his romantic interest, and he was like, well, what if this is as good as it gets? And it took me a long time to say that to myself. And not necessarily because of depression, because there was a long time when I was constantly improving through therapy and other things. But, you know, from when I plateaued, which was around 18, to now, it took a while. It took several years. And, it's a mark of, you know, maturity to get there. I'm not saying anyone who isn't there is immature, because it really is, like, a big deal.
You're talking about acceptance, not, like, conquering depression here.
No, God, no. No. But what I am saying is that, yes, I am talking about acceptance. But what I am saying is that when I did it, the amount, like, my depression didn't cease, because it never will, but my God, it's a completely different beast now.
See, I accept myself, but struggle with when others do not accept me, because I sort of want to grab people and shake them by the shoulders and just say, oh my God, I have worked so hard to get here to accept myself. Why can't you also just do me a solid and feel the same way?
I don't care about that at all. If someone doesn't like me for who I am, it's like, so I probably wouldn't get along with you anyway. But also, I think that's a little bit unfair, and I'll tell you why. I don't mean to, like, put you on the spot. I'm not, like, doing anything like that. But I think it's totally fair for people not to accept you immediately, because not you specifically, but anybody, because you didn't accept you immediately either. I think it's expecting far too much from somebody to just outright accept you when it took you that long.
Arguably, though, a large part of me not accepting me is other people not accepting me. So really, it's a cycle. So if people would just accept me to begin with, I would have had an easier time accepting myself.
Maybe.
I think definitely.
I don't know. But you might be right. You're probably right.
Again, a lot of what we've been pointing to is that, you know, depression has social causes and reasons.
Yeah.
Cause it to manifest in our heads, and I just don't want to misrepresent that I am only depressed in connection with my disability, which we literally made a caveat that, yeah, at the beginning of the episode, but I think
just again, well, it's 30 minutes in, you never know who's, you know, just tuned
still
in
listening, yeah.
But no, it's true. Although, like, we've tried to highlight areas where it was directly influenced by disability, because I think that's just frankly more interesting, because otherwise we would just be two disabled people talking about depression, you know, with as two separate entities. I think it's much more fun when it's together. But
this is so fun.
Disability absolutely does not imply depression or any other mental health issues. It's very, very acceptable and common to have a physical disability and no mental health issues whatsoever.
And what really gets to me is when the two are conflated by various medical professionals and or general human beings who seem to...
That's true. That is annoying.
Ugh, it's so frustrating. So, like, if I'm sad, or if I'm... And I mean sad in the sense that, like, people can clearly see that I am not having a good mental health day.
Like, you dropped your ice cream cone on the sidewalk as soon as you walked out of the Carvel, and
it's always got to be about my disability. I swear, like, that is what people assume.
It's terrible, isn't it?
And yeah, and then also various mental health professionals as well. It just seems to all go back to the disability. And as much as yes, it does, it also doesn't. Because a lot of the reasons I experience depression are completely psychological and, you know, chemical imbalances.
You know, the same as anyone else.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that that's sort of a place where the world needs to improve, you know, a lot. Because although having a disability sort of feeds into depression a lot of the time, the times when it doesn't are also the times when, like, you as a mental health professional need to know most of all. Because, you know, it's not always a disability. It's not. It's just not. Sometimes we're just as depressed as anyone else for reasons like anyone else.
Yeah. And you know what this is sort of reminding me of?
What's that?
So there's often the assumption when you see a medical professional that if you are overweight or, you know, not stick figure skinny, that all of your health problems are rooted in being heavier.
Yeah.
And I find that to be somewhat connected to just this general idea of pigeonholing. So it's like, there is this one aspect about you, therefore it affects all other aspects about you.
Well, that's
what happens to me a lot of times.
But see, that's the thing. That is a grain of truth. That's true. But the problem isn't that. The problem is when it therefore then snowballs into influencing everything else that's said afterwards. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're, like, take obesity for the example, because you used it. If you're obese, you're far more likely to be less healthy and more, you know, susceptible to XYZ. But just because doesn't mean that, like, one doesn't necessarily imply the other, unless it's already true. Then it does. But until it is, then it's not. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I followed. That was a whole lot of words.
But it's the same with disability. In fact, I would argue that it's more true with disability than because actually, like, with obesity, at least you have, like, science proving that those two things actually have a correlation, where disability is so unknown that relationship is not even studied in most cases.
Yeah. So it's essentially an assumption. And I've had this mean over and over and over again that my disability somehow has something to do with every single other mental health issue or physical health issue that I have. Which, on the one hand, sometimes it's, like, convenient to be able to peg things on my disability.
Oh my God. Well, we talked about in the last episode, like, I learned that sensory issues I have was actually directly caused by my CP, and I never knew. So that was actually, like, super cool to know. Because I thought it was something else, and it was cool to know that it wasn't.
Yeah. And for me, there are various aspects of my health that have, like, people try to explain it away as being connected to my disability, but I know that it's not. But at this point, it's just like, all right, let's just use it as a convenient excuse.
I sort of want to talk about coping, too, because... Yeah. Because you sort of have two extremes when you try to cope with depression and you're disabled at the same time. You have the, you know, quote-unquote Debbie Downer type that's all, like, it's a cloudy day and it's always raining on, you know, in their world. And it's like, you're never happy. Or you are this, you know, happy-go-lucky Energizer Bunny type of person who, you know, couldn't see a bad day if there was one right in their face. and... I really, there's issues with both of them, but I was more of the Debbie Downer, right? But I feel like, and I don't know because I'm not one of these people, but I feel like the pressure is really on the people that are happy all the time, because they get screwed twice, right? Because if they're not happy, then they're letting themselves down, right? And everyone around them. And if they're genuinely happy, not as a cover for depression, then no one believes them, because you're actually just doing this because you're depressed and you're not actually happy. And it's like, no, can't you see it? Like, you're just caught in this loop.
See, I'm...
I don't know, though.
...always in this weird spot where I experience depression, and then also can sometimes be very, very happy and optimistic and outgoing. And that's generally not a fake thing. But for some reason, people don't seem to think that being this happy-go-lucky person can coexist with depression.
Well, that's sort of what I'm talking about.
And then end up having to keep up appearances.
I think that's another episode, too, because I don't think that's just depression either. But I think that that's sort of... I think that that puts unnecessary pressure on you if it's not genuine. I mean, if it is, it's one thing, that it's real feeling, that's not pressure. But if when you're not that way, you know, people wonder why you're not that way instead of just accepting that you're having a day today, then you force yourself to act that way. That's when the pressure is like on your shoulders, and that's when it's not cool.
It's utterly exhausting. Is what it is.
Well, you know, to me, like, I'm an insider in your life, man. I know how miserable you are. I think the fact that people think you're happy all the time is, like, hilarious. Because, like...
That's so nice of you.
No, I don't mean that in, like, a bad way, although I'm positive that's how it came across to everyone who's just listening. I just mean, like, if I can tell somebody, you know, like, oh, you, Emily, God, she's the worst. They won't believe me. Not that I ever would.
Kyle's being mean right now.
Yes, I am. I'm sorry. But but it's also, it is proving a point, though. Because I don't mean to say you're miserable all the time. Obviously, you're not. But your public self is very optimistic, except when you're, you know, arguing for accessibility somewhere, then you're angry. But, you know, but otherwise, you're a very happy public person.
Yeah, you can't win for losing.
And because I've seen you, like, other ways, it's just, it's an interesting dichotomy from somebody who is on the inside, is all I'm saying.
I remember you once posted this picture of me, and I would also like to defend myself because I am not a miserable person.
No, she's not. I'm being hyperbolic.
But you once posted this picture of me on, like, your personal Facebook.
Right.
Of me with a dog. Yeah.
Yes, a very rarely seen Emily. The happiest you'll
ever see Emily or something like that.
Well, to be fair, it was.
It's true. But it's just funny because everyone else, I feel like, was like, oh my God, Emily's happy all the time. And you're like, no.
What are you talking about? No, but I mean, look, when you're disabled, right? Which is literally every episode of the show.
Tell me more about being disabled, Kyle.
Yeah, right? You do the same. No, but when you're disabled, everything that you do and most things that you are sort of just have this lens attached to it that is your disability. So, you know, I don't sort of blame anyone for assuming that depression is caused by the disability. But what I do start blaming people for is after you tell them that, no, it's not always the case that that's true, that they don't listen. It's a very easy to see why somebody would think that because, you know, in this world, disability is seen as something nobody wants and, you know, it's a bad thing always and blah, 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 like, you know, which is not true and something that...
Here's a more accurate statement. If I'm miserable, there's a pretty good chance that it actually has nothing to do with my disability and I'm just generally salty about something. So, you know, people automatically think that, like, if I'm being salty, it must be disability related. But the reality is I'm usually complaining about things that are...
That is not true at all.
No, I don't think that's the case. No, because like... But I'm talking about like, my disability.
I know. Not disability. Your disability. That's an important distinction. Disability. No, well, there is a very important distinction. When you're talking about disability, it's a lot different than when you're talking about your disability.
Yeah, like when I'm being cranky about something, it's rarely my disability.
No, but when you're cranky about something,
it has to do with disability.
Yeah, that's just who she is.
There's the distinction.
Yes, that's just who Emily is. She is the saltiest person on earth when it comes to disability. But you know what?
No, I don't like salt.
Yeah, I do.
Salt is disgusting.
Weirdo. Look, if any of you say that there are some people who can't eat salt for dietary reasons, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the people that don't like salt.
I don't like salt. You know those street pretzels in New York City?
You scrape off the salt?
Onto the street.
You're a salt hater and a litterer. God, you're the
worst.
Salt
is biodegradable. Is it?
But I don't know, actually. Probably. It comes from the ocean. Of course it is.
Oh, my God. This is devolving.
Anyway, mental health, disability, get used to it. Yeah, no. on a serious note, the things that are most important to know
Are we doing our key takeaway?
Yeah, I think so. For me, the things that are most important to know is depression can affect everyone. Depression affects some people with disabilities at a higher rate than others, not all. If you meet a person with a disability who also is depressed, the odds of it having to do directly with their disability are about as much as it has to do with anything else. It's a crapshoot. There's no way to tell unless they tell you. Don't assume. That's stupid. And if somebody's coming to you to confide in you about their depression, the best thing you can do is listen.
I totally echo everything you're saying and would also add as my key takeaway that if your depression does, in fact, have to do with your disability.
Oh, that's okay, too.
You do not owe an explanation about that to anyone, but also know that that is legitimate and does not in any way delegitimize what you were feeling.
Absolutely not. And in fact, I don't want to speak for everyone with a disability, but nearly everyone I know. Well, I'm only going to speak for the people I know. I can't speak for everyone. That's ridiculous. But like, everyone I know has gone through that. There has not, I don't know a single person who hasn't like looked in the mirror and said, you know, about their disability and had it bring them down. And I don't know about always spiraling into depression, but everyone's had that moment. And that is a totally normal moment that happens. It's a part of self-acceptance. And the sooner you get there, hopefully the better you'll be. And if you're depressed right now, we're here for you. And you can always email us and talk because we're the accessible stall. And that's what we do. We talk.
Okay, we're not trained mental health professionals.
No, of course not.
We are happy to lend an ear.
Yeah, that's much better. But,
Kyle, let me handle the PR.
Oh, God. No.
Yeah, no, I'm way better than you are.
Anyway.
So, this has been another episode of The Accessible Stall. And also, I feel like we genuinely owe an apology to everyone who we probably just brought down with us
for this episode. Yeah, if this sort of reignited your depression, look, I'm sorry. If you're still here, if you didn't shut it off at the first inkling of that, you know, more power to you. I appreciate it. We appreciate it. But genuine apologies. Hopefully it didn't, though. Hopefully you got something from this.
At the very least, if you are experiencing depression, you're not alone. And I mean that with all sincerity.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely not. It's okay. I feel weird saying that because that's usually like the cheesiest thing that the commercials on TV say, but I do mean it. You know, depression shouldn't have the stigma that it does. And
that is so true. Why did you not say that?
And the fact, well, because we want to know who's listening all the way through. And the fact that it has a stigma only feeds into that stigma, which is sort of almost unique to depression in a weird way. I mean, I'm sure other things have that too, but
stigma perpetuates stigma. That's just how it is.
Yeah, but with depression, it's like you can't, it's taboo to talk about it, which is like the thing you're supposed to do to start getting it in check. So
yeah,
like,
I hear that, but
I mean, if you can't even do that, then like how are you supposed to get better? That's what I mean. Like it's an odd thing that we deem as a society to be taboo, and I don't think that that's right.
And we here at the Accessible Stall are here to tackle those taboos.
Anyway, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Our next episode will be on bananas.
Bananas?
Bananas.
This is bananas.
B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
What?
Why'd you screw that up?
What happened?
You didn't spell bananas right.
B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
Well, then
bananas.
Me, Tarzan, you're gay. Good night, everybody.